Hi and hello, football fans. It's your old pal, Dave Damashek. Welcome to the Dave Damashek football program. I hope all's well wherever you are, and I hope wherever you are, you're receiving the audio portion of the show without too much difficulty. I know it might sound like we're having a little bit of audio trouble. That's because we are, but we're going to press forward. We hope and trust that you'll stick with us. Real quick, shout out to my old man who had a little ocular surgery today, and apparently it went well, so shout out to him. And an apology to all the kids going back to school. I can't believe it's mid-August and everybody's already going back to school. When I was a child, I made a pledge to myself and to the world that when I grew up, my first order of business would be to adjust the school schedule from 5 days a week to four and limit it to 3 months a year. So I would basically invert the school year and the summer, you know, back, you know, we only need 3 months worth of school. And instead the man has won. And at my advanced age, I don't know that I'm ever going to win this battle. It might be done. And so I apologize to all the kids out there for letting you down. Let's just move on. Let's say hello to everybody who's joining us in Studio 66. A little bit somber after that that little speech there. But nonetheless, yeah. Let's talk about the grand sport that is pro football. And say hello around the room to the house that we have, the full house we have here in 66. Starting off, Bucky Brooks, what's the poop with you, fella?
Everything is great. Am I still MVP? I know we're beyond the quarter pole. I just want to make sure I'm still MVP of the check.
Yeah, but you know what? Ike Taylor's making his charge. Maurice Jones-Drew is making his. So on and so forth.
But I'm the leader.
Stay sharp.
I should be in the winner's circle.
That's not the way to inspire you. I've been watching Bill O'Brien on Hard Knocks. And I don't know that that's
you don't
what
want
you
me to
need.
Be comfortable.
I understand that you have to read your players differently. You know, some people need the care and other people need the whip. I feel that I don't want to let you rest on your laurels.
Okay.
Nate Burleson, Michael Robinson, also doing dynamite work on the show. Keep that fire in your belly, Buck. I see good things in your future. Next up, from London, England, he is now our resident Miami Dolphins fan. It's Handsome Hank.
That's the music again.
He's Handsome Hank.
Hello, Handsome. Oh, yeah, there you go. For those on video, for those watching on video, and I do believe that this podcast, for the record, is available in full on YouTube for the time being. I know I've promoted it here and there and everywhere. For the time being, I think your best bet, look for it on YouTube. Go to NFL, subscribe there, and look for the DDFP in full. You'll see a video treat courtesy of Handsome Hank every time you hear his song. The music by itself by the one-man house band Dick Banks continues to be terrific. How are you, Handsome?
I'm very well indeed. Thank you, Dave. How are you?
I'm fine. Yep. I just hope that people are sticking with us as we deal with our audience.
I thought we'd agreed to say that we were doing this from space. This was the first ever podcast from space.
That's cool. Yeah, that would be a cool idea.
I think people would have got behind that and accepted the audio issues, but actually we are on Earth.
Well, watching Hard Knocks, the guys up in the satellite, the astronauts up in the satellite, were watching a Houston Texans game in the most recent episode, which I was pleased by because, as I mentioned, I think it would be very sad and sadly ironic for the guys who live up in a satellite for a year or two that they are that they don't get satellite TV. So that would be sad for them if they didn't. But anyway, I'm sorry, I couldn't really get through. The joke was a little labored because Black Tie, not once but twice, just said into my ear that I have to introduce Elliot Harrison, as if I would have forgotten that as I go around the
table. You know what? I'm just chill over here.
Elliot Harrison, what's the move with you, fella?
Well, I'm a little, I guess I'm questioning, you know, about him being MVP, Bucky. You know, I'm a big fan of Bucky. But
it's former players.
Oh, because I believe the defending Shecky champ is me.
Yes,
You don't go back to back.
Yeah, you probably turn it over. Unless, you turn it over at the goal line.
No. Au contraire. You're wrong about that.
Back to back?
Yes, you can. No, you can. AJ Hawk went back to back for the best player guest that we have.
What was my percentage vote?
It was 75%. Oh. Elliot Harrison, for the non-player guest on DDFP 2014. The Shecky Awards are coming fast and furious. They're going to be here before you know it.
Yeah. I made notes.
All right, let's get into pro football and get to very important stuff. And the first thing is, on Tuesday, the big, it started when you woke up. You heard the Steelers were looking at Mike Vick by end of day. Number seven had another number seven on his team. That's the first issue to resolve, is who gets the number seven. I think Roethlisberger is safe in keeping that one. EH, what do you think about Mike Vick 2015?
I don't get it. I don't get
really?
It.
Really?
No, I don't.
Don't get it? They need a backup.
Everything I've ever heard is that Mike Vick isn't really passionate about football. You know, and some players just, that's not necessarily what they want to do all the time. And so I don't know that Mike Vick has ever been a preparation guy. At this point of his career, he's what, 35 years old, right? Is it the same mobile Mike Vick that we saw before? You know, when they had Charlie Batch, they had a guy that went in there, was prepared, and even though if he didn't play, you knew that Charlie Batch wasn't going to be making the mental mistakes on the field, and I think that's what the Steelers need, not Michael Vick. And I just not excited about it, to be honest.
Handsome, how say you?
Well, I know you must be excited because this is a guy you've been trying to put on NFL teams for the last 2 years. Anytime a quarterback is needed, you're like, Mike Vick's the man who should be there. So it's kind of...
That's right. And I'll tell you this. At minimum, the Texans and Browns would have been better off if Mike Vick on August 1st was announced their starting quarterback and preparing for the 2015 season. We're looking, for those of you on video, you can see Mike Vick stole a game against the Pittsburgh Steelers back in 2014. Steelers fans should keep that in mind. And that's really the point, EH, that why I like Mike Vick as a signing. Now, if Roethlisberger gets hurt, the Steelers season is very likely doomed. But if he goes down for a week or two, I like my chances with Mike Vick more than I do with Chaz Batch. He can steal a game. He's a wild card.
No, I mean, I like the move. There are a couple of reasons why I think this is a good move. One, the relationship between Mike Tomlin and Mike Vick. They're from the same area, so there's a connection there.
You
so,
always talk about that personal relationship and how much that impacts.
Area. So Mike Tomlin grew up in the same area. He's known Mike Vick for a long time. So I think when it comes to the preparation, I think Mike Vick will probably show a little more respect for Mike Tomlin and the Steelers, making sure he's always prepared. It was disappointing to find out about those comments last year prior to the San Diego game that he didn't prepare to be a starter.
That's exactly what I was referring to.
And he didn't look good. But I don't think that'd be an issue. I also believe that when you look at what they had, they gave Landry Jones every opportunity to be the backup. Part of the reason they played him extensively in the Hall of Fame game in week one and also in week two was to see if he was ready to be the next guy. Gronkowski had been out the entire time in the offseason with the shoulder injury. Then he comes back and he didn't look good from what I heard that week he was there before he got hurt. They need to have a guy that can get them out of games.
That's been Gronkowski's injury has been looming pretty much for the month of August, so they had to do something.
They needed the guy, and when they came out of the last game knowing that Landry Jones couldn't be that guy, they had to go and get a veteran. And look, the way you're looking at your backup quarterback situation, we're talking about a game or two max. That's what you're hoping
right.
for if you have to do it. So with Mike Vick being a proven starter, a guy that has won a lot of games in the league, I think what they're saying is, in a two-game stretch, could we win with Mike Vick? They're confident enough that Todd Haley can come up with an offense.
I mean, he's certainly better than Landry Jones at the very least. Handsome, it's surprising to me, you know, obviously as a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, I'm looking at the local press that this has been getting back there, and people are crazy about this. A lot of people saying, that's it for me with the Steelers. I'm never going to watch them again.
Really?
For moral reasons.
Right.
I'm surprised. I'm not shilling for the league at this point. I'm really surprised that he signs and that's still an issue. I mean, that doesn't...
Especially given he signed for a team in the same state already once. So it feels
as a side note, I bring that up.
Right.
I'm not to say that what he did was all right, but I mean, went to jail for a long stretch to serve, pay for his crime and all that kind of stuff.
He appears to have made amends now and is actually, as I understand it, helping dog charities and doing all kinds of things like that.
But aside from that, though, EH, you don't think, I mean, you don't, what about what I just said? The Texans wouldn't be better off with Mike Vick prepping as the starter? I don't mean dropping him in there now.
If you look at it through the prism of, hey, we need a spot start here, you know.
Talking about as the starter for the season.
Wouldn't
the Texans be better off with Mike Vick?
No, absolutely not. I mean, to me, last year when he was in New York, the word was that a lot of the players looked up to him. He's like a living legend with a lot of 23-year-old guys coming to the league. If I've got Marcus Wheaton and Martavis Bryant and Le'Veon Bell, who are all under 25, I don't want them learning bad habits. I don't want them being exposed to somebody that may or may not care. I'm not saying he doesn't care, but I thought those comments were alarming to me. I mean, your job as a backup, we just talked about Hard Knocks, right? Didn't Bill O'Brien, when he named the starting quarterback, say, Ryan, I need you to be ready to play. That's a backup quarterback's job. I just don't love it from an organizational standpoint. Fine. For one or two games, if you just need the guy to play, great.
But isn't Mike Vick, he's certainly not the first guy. It's not like he was on a contending team. He's on this bum team. And it really must be, if you're Mike Vick with all the pelts he has on the wall, to say,
pelts?
I'm backing up Geno Smith. And I'm at the back end of this bum loss season. All right, he's not the first guy to quit on a team. I feel like, look at him when his team is relevant and everything. I know that's not exactly what you want, but I think that's a reality.
But this isn't going to be his team. I mean, it's fine, but it's Ben Roethlisberger's team. He's going to be along for the ride.
Well, but I think that's the thing. To go back to what EH was alluding to with the Jets, I think the big thing, the frustration from Mike Vick last year is, when you're a guy who's accomplished what he's accomplished individually in the league, to sit behind a Geno Smith has to be tough to stomach. And the backup quarterback job isn't for everyone. All starters can't transition into being backups, because in your mind, when you've had a level of success, it's hard for you to say that this guy's a better player than me, I'm going to help him get ready. The other thing that you point to about the 23-year-olds kind of treating Mike Vick like he's an icon, you have to go back and look. At the time these guys were small and teenage, he was on the cover of Madden. That's as big as it gets. So that level of influence and sway is significant. And so even though it's Ben Roethlisberger's team, he does bring a level of leadership, if directed the right way, that he can help those young guys get on board. And
I hear EH, though, that maybe it could get sideways. But I just don't think on a contending team.
Yeah, I don't think on a contending. And also, right. I think Mike Vick understands, look, I'm 35 years old. I understand where I am right now. And I also think that it was very clearly stated to him. Look.
Yeah, there's not a debate. Like, you might be able to work your way in there. Roethlisberger struggles. You might get in there.
Well, you talk about Pittsburgh. Look at what Pittsburgh has done with their backup quarterbacks in the past. Think about how long Byron Leftwich and Charlie Batch occupied those roles. And so if I'm Mike Vick and I'm looking to ride off into the sunset, why not land in Pittsburgh, an organization that is known for taking care of their own? Why not see if I can go there and maybe get 2-3 more years out of it until they find the next quarterback to replace
Pittsburgh? All right, but Dave, you mentioned, okay, wouldn't the Texans be better off? If the Texans went off and hired Dick Geron to be their head coach, what would everybody say? No, the old retread, good old boys system. Why is this guy getting another chance? How is Michael Vick any different? How is Michael Vick any different than a head coach like Chan Gailey?
I hear you, except that they just named a lesser retread named Brian Hoyer as their starter. So I follow your point. That's why all summer long start Malice.
I will say this. Mike Vick won't be for every coach and what everyone is looking for, because it takes a level of, I guess, adaptability to maybe deal with a quarterback that plays the game in that fashion. However, I will say that if you look around the league and you look at the quarterbacks that are playing, even a Ryan Fitzpatrick, who's maybe, 33 and 55, there are not a lot of quarterbacks that are out there. And so when you're looking at a backup job, who's available? Who are you going to sign? And so
I agree with that.
He's probably the best of the lot as an experienced player who has a number of starts.
He's better than Andy Dalton. He's better than Ryan Fitzpatrick. He's better than Josh McCown. These are teams that are starting those guys. I mean, these are names that are going to be out there on opening day.
If he's willing to prepare and work hard, I'm all for it. But, I mean, he said it last year. He wasn't even prepared.
I think you said an interesting thing, Buck. You said everybody can't accept the backup role. You have to be a starter if you're the main man. Let's then switch into Peyton Manning. And he's at a critical point, obviously, in his career, which is basically accepting the fact, and we talked about this quite a bit, too, in the last 6 months, willingness as a star to turn around and hand the ball off. And this is the only way, as far as I can tell, that the Broncos have a chance of succeeding this year. Because did you see Peyton Manning? I know it's sacrilege, and how dare I? And Dave doesn't like Peyton Manning for some unknown reason. None of that. That's all rubbish. I'm looking at him with my eyeballs. He does not look good. He can't get the ball 25 yards downfield. I'm going to start with you on this one, Buck. Am I crazy?
No, I mean, I think it's kind of what we would call, like, because young Kobe's behind the glass, it's the Kobe Bryant effect. And Kobe Bryant's mind, as long as he's on the Lakers, he's the number one.
And Tiger Woods effect, too.
He's the number one option. For Peyton Manning, it's hard to think that if they struggle the first two games and they're trying to be a balanced team, they're trying to run the ball, and he's kind of playing a complimentary role, it's going to be hard for Peyton Manning to not say, look, I've done this for years. This is what I do. We need to throw it all over the yard and put it on me. It's hard for guys to change that. Ego drives so much of the success that they've had. It's going to be hard for Peyton Manning to take
the backup role
in this offense in terms of letting it be a run first, pass second.
Right, offense. And Elliot, you know, unlike the Bills, who we talk about, who have a loaded team, and the Bengals, who have a loaded team, save potentially the QB spot, I think the same is pretty true about the Broncos. I know there's questions still, even with Evan Mathis now, on that offensive line, but that defense is loaded. They have nice receivers. And Peyton Manning, it seems like, I have a hunch that as this season wears on, it's going to be like, nope, 18's going down in a ball of flames. We're going down with me as the captain of this ship, or shame the devil. Wow, Broncos fans, I bet you, they've already started. Hey, Osweiler's a better option. That started in August. That's going to get worse. How say you?
It might. I just want to bring both conversations together. I like the Evan Mathis signing about 10,000 times more than the Michael Vick signing. Now, that's a signing that has value. The Broncos' offensive line was in shambles. They got a 39-year-old quarterback. Now, this makes a heck of a lot of sense. I'm not disrespecting Mike Vick. I'm just calling it the way it is right now. I watched Dan Fouts his last year. I watched Dan Marino his last year, and it wasn't pretty, man. I mean, they just weren't getting the ball down the field the way they used to, and I think that's why they hung him up. You remember Dan Marino? Didn't Denny Green try to get Dan Marino to play?
I mean, you always try and kick the tires on a guy that's had a number of things. Like, think about Brett Favre. If Brett Favre, at the end of his career, wanted to continue to play, someone still would have given him an opportunity based on what he did.
Sure.
However, Peyton Manning's arm strength is going to continue to decline and dwindle. Like, he's no longer going to be the guy that we revere as a five-time MVP. Like, it doesn't go the other way. Father Time is undefeated. And so, unless he's willing to play the way that Gary Kubiak kind of sees the way that this team should play, it's going to be a struggle. And I don't know if, from an ego standpoint, if he's willing to sacrifice that.
And it sounds like, you know, there was a story that came out yesterday where Peyton said, Don't listen to any of this stuff about my arm. What happened at the end of last season, I got a sick bug from my daughter from school and in week 14. and then I was really dehydrated, and that was what caused everything to go wrong at the end of the season. Clearly, that's not the case. What happened is we saw him beginning to decline. But if he can't admit it to himself yet,
it's the Kobe Bryant effect.
Right. You know what's crazy?
Kobe, all of the great ones, they all are wired like
one of the oldest things, it's a cliche that guys hang on too long, that they don't know when to quit. Muhammad Ali, Willie Mays, the list goes on and on with these examples. And yet anybody who is in the here and now, I guess it's the fan base, but to some degree the media picks up on that. And I'm the crazy one for saying Peyton Manning is clearly on the decline. That's disrespectful, Dave. Why do you hate Peyton so much? He can't throw the ball very well anymore. That's all I'm saying to you. And you talk about, you know, year to year, the decline as you get older. Like I say, week to week, you can watch his arm strength tail off over the last couple of years as the season goes on. What's he going to look like by November this year?
It's really evident in a cold weather climate. Mm. Because if you think about it, let's think about it playing golf. So when you play golf in the summer months, the ball flies farther, it goes farther, like you get the distance on your drive. When it's cold, it doesn't fly as far. So with Peyton Manning, I think it's the same is true. As you get into November, December, when the weather conditions begin to become a factor, he's not going to be as effective as a deep ball pass. And so if you looked at how the Colts played him at the end, they condensed the field.
Yep.
They jammed the middle of the field and dared him to throw it to the outside, and he was unable to do it. Everyone is going to copy that film until he's able to prove it.
Yeah, and on that note, when you guys were talking about this, the guy I was thinking of is, for every 50 examples of quarterbacks, their arm strength going down, there's one Warren Moon, who has like that rubber arm. But you know what? Even Warren Moon, where were his last two stops as starter? Seattle, Kingdom. Mm-hmm. Minnesota, the Metrodome. Climate control, that helped his arm out. But like I said, for every Warren Moon, I could give you 50 examples. Kenny Anderson, we could go down the line. All these guys who, the last couple of years of their career, their arm strength wasn't there.
Peyton Manning is 39. That's all you need to say. He is at the age where guys now are in heavy decline.
The Broncos can give him a break by making him having him practice 2 days a week. If he's willing to take that workload off himself as well, I think,
I don't know if he can. He's a control freak, because you've heard the stories for years and years when he was at Indianapolis and in Denver, how he runs and orchestrates the practice and how they do all the extra reps and all the other stuff. Like, it's tough for a guy like that who's been a control freak to kind of let loose of the reins. I just don't see it happening. And so this is a marriage that is destined to fail unless he's able to do something that most great players.
Well, the irony of it is, too, is that John Elway did do that and decided, all right, I'm willing to hand the ball off to Terrell Davis and got two rings in exchange for that. Why can't Elway just say, hey, Peyton, this is the way it goes, man. This is the only way we can win.
Maybe it takes the combination of Elway and Kubiak, because Kubiak was on that staff to tell him, like, hey, this is our best chance of winning the title. If you want to win the title, this is how we have to do it. Run it. You be a compliment.
All right.
I want to say one thing on Elway. Do you guys remember Elway's retirement press conference? Do you remember what he said? The first thing he said is, I just can't do it anymore. Like, I physically can't do it anymore. He knew that, yeah, we just won the Super Bowl, but I could come out 99.
They've won two straight Super Bowls at that point. So the temptation to say, like, I don't, maybe I can, by hook or by crook, get three in a row. And even that wasn't enough to make him stick around. Speaking of teams with a chance to win a Super Bowl, as I've been saying, the Houston Texans have now made a decision that they cannot win the Super Bowl. Laugh all you want, Bucky. That's right. You don't win a Super Bowl with Brian Hoyer. Bill O'Brien, though, on this week's Hard Knocks, told that compelling stuff. What else jumped out at you from Hard Knocks? Handsome, I'll jump in front of you before you give your answer. Well, I'm giving you a moment to conjure.
After you.
Thank you. I wanted to point out that Charles James II, that things are so dire that they need a running back, that they're taking a defensive back and saying, like, hey, we like that way that kid moves. See if he can run the ball. My concern is, though, that Charles James II will thrive as an NFL running back. And then, because they realized, well, he didn't play it in college. He played it in high school. How's that going to make his college coach from Charleston Southern look if this guy makes it as an NFL running back? But he wasn't good enough to run the ball at Charleston Southern. I'm concerned for that guy.
No. I mean, it happens. Like, sometimes pro coaches can have a vision for a player that maybe their college coach or even their high school coach didn't have. Look, I've told you, I didn't play defense in high school, and I ended up my last 3 years playing corner. Sometimes it works out like that. I think for Charles,
that is funny that happens at the pro level.
Because what you're trying to do is, like, you're trying to take an athlete and see what's the best way to maximize it. For Charles, and you think about it, Bill O'Brien comes from New England. What do they do in New England consistently?
Right.
They have a bunch of players that are kind of utility guys to sometimes get them out of jams, get them out of situations. They did it with Troy Brown, some Mike Vrabel. Other guys have played multiple positions. They did it in Houston, obviously, with J.J. Watt. So maybe they're trying to see, if we get in a jam where all our running backs are down, we only have 46 guys dressed up, maybe Charles can be the guy to get us out of a game.
Handsome. Now it's your turn.
Thank you. Well, just on just to comment on him, I mean, I know that NFL Films does a great job of editing this, but that guy, I mean, he was all over the field in that preseason game. Everything, he was making tackles.
Every
on defense,
special
on special teams,
play.
He was all over the place. But I want to come out on this show. I'm going to come out as a Brian Cushing fan. A week after saying I don't like the guy, he's a bully. I think. Well, first of all, the vomiting, and we work with NFL Films as Hard Knocks is coming into the building here, and so one of our colleagues was talking to Ken Rogers, who's the producer of it, who said that there was another 2.5 minutes that what didn't make it to of Brian Cushing vomiting. That they was like, okay, we got our point across in the 40 seconds of, which was more than enough, by the way. But so when Cushing said he'd lost, like, yesterday's lunch and the day before, he wasn't kidding.
How can you root for the man who could have easily? This is a world-class athlete. Surely he could have summoned the strength. And if you don't know, Brian Cushing just purged everything inside his body onto the field. But why couldn't he get up and walk 20 feet off the field? He just left a mound of his bile and whatever he ate over the last 48 hours right there. Now Charles, James, or whoever else gets tackled might land in the puke. Thanks but a lot, Cushing.
He's now a comic, but like at first I was like, oh, this guy's really not a nice guy at all. But if you're consistently like that, he's a comic. He must be doing it on purpose.
I guess there is something to be said for that consistency. EH.
I wish I had something valuable to contribute to this conversation, but I haven't watched Hard Knocks, man.
Oh, no. You know what Elliot needs? Too bad you would really be envious of J.J. Watt, who has a king-size bed tucked away in the equipment closet and just takes naps in the middle of the day.
You know what we should do? Send Elliot to space so he can get a satellite so he can watch.
But you know what? I do want to, Bucky, just on the topic of a guy switching positions, what do you think about the Panthers who are leaning on Jonathan Stewart, who can't ever stay healthy, and Shaq Thompson? I've heard so many people talk about that. He could have really been
a good pro running back. He refuses to play running back.
Yeah, he refused. You know, it's funny. I think for a rookie, it's hard to put that on him, but Shaq Thompson was a guy that if you looked at him, evaluated him as a running back, some would say maybe he was a better running back prospect in terms of his vision, his footwork, his ability to get out, and also the fact that he had fresh legs, meaning he didn't have a ton of carries as a collegian. So you get a guy that you think is a fresh guy who has probably a better chance of being durable and staying healthy from that regard. I don't think they'll switch him, but I do think it's an intriguing option if you do get in a situation where you need a running back because he has played it.
All right, let's move on to something that Black Tie Behind the Glass is very excited about. It's the release of the new Madden game. You can simulate games on Madden. And so we took the Houston Texans roster and we put Brian Hoyer in as the quarterback, and he played Ryan Mallett's Houston Texans. Let's see some highlights of how this game went. With 40 seconds remaining in the second quarter, Mallett and his squad line up 3rd and 6 at the 7-yard line. Let's see what Mallett can do here. He completes it. A 6-yard pass down to the goal line. Is he in? 1st and goal at the 1. Looks in to me.
That is close.
See? He can find the youngster there. Jalen Strong. Look at the nice one-handed catch.
He didn't need to make the one-handed catch.
I thought that was Max Strong, the former.
Now, with 14 seconds, and by the way, if you didn't figure it out, there's your touchdown. 1st and goal. Mallett to Alfred Blue for the touchdown. Here's Hoyer. Oh, that looks terrible.
That ball looked bad.
Oh, nice look catch. At that. Great. He saves him there. Does the pass catcher. There is your touchdown for DeAndre Hopkins. He's going to be a star no matter who's throwing it this year. In this case,
that was an interception.
Oh, that was an interception.
That was an INT.
All right. So I listen.
It's difficult when the same team is playing itself.
It's hard to follow what happened there. Bottom line is, with 38 seconds left in the fourth quarter, Hoyer threw that interception. Mallett's team wins.
Yeah.
Doesn't just win.
Is that a shot sheet?
That's right. Yeah. 10-0. Black Tie goes the extra mile. Black Tie and his leashes behind the glass go the extra mile. Congratulations to Ryan Mallett. I hope when Bill O'Brien sees that, he's not so red in the face that he doesn't realize that there's still time to make the
mistake.
Change.
Made a mistake, right.
10-0. Hoyer didn't even score points.
Are you surprised?
No, I'm not surprised. I'm surprised that Bill O'Brien doesn't have the good sense. You go, well, we have to go with the kid who we know better. You know Ryan Mallett. You worked with him in his rookie season, and you worked with him last year.
Coach, I tell you.
Coaches are conservative by nature.
What Bucky just said. You know what does it tell me? It tells me that Bill O'Brien is in job security mode, as all these guys are. Roll the dice. Go with the higher-end option.
Typically, the way it works in the offices, coaches want to play the guy that they feel like they can trust.
That's right.
They feel like they know that they can minimize the risk by putting this player on the field, which is why you see a lot of veterans that are hanging around. Front office people, general managers and higher-ups, they want the young guy, the guy that they see more potential. So what
those
you're
guys typically
with,
have more job security anyway. You know, GM lifespan is way longer.
They want potential. They're willing to make bigger risks. And so probably from upstairs, you're saying, look, Mallett is a young guy. We can build around him. We can grow with him. But Bill O'Brien is thinking about right now.
There's a cynicism from head coaches that is, well, the front office guys just want to put butts in the seat. Now, I'm not interested in what's the most interesting. I'm interested in winning the game.
Yeah.
I'm not talking from a put butts in the seat standpoint either. They're cynical, the coaches. But so, you know, a portion of fans out there are like, I want the nice set. We're watching football. It's for our pleasure on some level, obviously on a large level, why we're doing this. So you go with the higher end option. And by the way, the Cleveland Browns are on the cusp of making a similar mistake here with Josh McCown. Let's get to it. Cleveland Browns with Johnny Football versus the Cleveland Browns with Josh McCown. Late in the second quarter, 2nd and 4. Football and the Browns down 3-0.
I like those uniforms.
Manziel, Zach Barkevious Mingo.
I like the uniforms.
What was he thinking on that play?
We're ahead to the fourth quarter, though. Manziel trying to take the lead. Overthrows his pass catcher. But they do force the overtime there. That's Josh McCown, unseen, but he did lead a field goal drive, so they're ahead in overtime. Here's Football, though, trying to wage a comeback.
This is
his time. It's incomplete. Josh McCown shaking
6-3.
Enjoy the season, Browns fans.
Wow.
6-3 in overtime. That was sad. That may, or maybe that's a credit to the great defense.
Great defense.
That's how you look at it.
Maybe they're fanning it for it.
Yeah, glass half full. Yeah. Next up, let's get to the Houston Texans. No, the Philadelphia Eagles, I should say.
Oh, why is this even a contest?
This isn't a contest. What are you
talking about? Why is this a contest?
Well, I decided that we should skip over Mark Sanchez.
Why?
Because
he's the most likely guy.
What did I just say? Because I just said for 5 minutes. We already know what Mark Sanchez is. We know what Brian Hoyer is.
And we know what Tim Tebow is.
Sam Bradford versus Matt Barkley.
We know what Tim Tebow is.
No, I know what the people want. Sam Bradford versus Tim Tebow in Eagles Fest 2015. Start of the second quarter. Tebow's Eagles on the 33. Listen, there are a lot of people who still think Tim Tebow should be the starter. So
I bet he runs.
I want to discourage that. Here he goes. Look at that.
Oh, throw.
That was a shame.
Nice.
Here he goes. Tebow.
Oh, yes.
Intercepted. Bradford now. Look at Bradford.
Just don't hit him.
Heisman Trophy winner gets it to Riley Cooper. They go up 7-3. Bradford's Eagles.
Riley Cooper would have never caught that.
Don't hit him.
Now watch this. Look at Bradford. Rolling. He's got room.
Oh, he would. Does he get up?
He carries two Eagles defenders. He's glad handing, and they're glad. 14-3. Bradford's Eagles over Tebow's Eagles. 14-3. The only question is, how did Tebow scratch out 3 points?
Right.
Can we do this for Joseph Randle versus Darren McFadden?
You know what? Your wish is our command. Next week, we have to do that for EH. Let's settle the record.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
Because since you hate what the Texans did so bad, I just jotting down some notes here. Okay, I have the top defense in the league this year is Buffalo. Then I have Seattle. Then I have the Jets. Who's four? Who's the fourth best defense? Is it the Rams? Is it the Texans?
Might be Denver.
Maybe Denver. But could we say that Houston's arguably could be a top five defense?
If Jadeveon Clowney, I keep saying, if he is anything close to what he was supposed to be as the front, keep in mind, people have short-term memories. He was the first overall pick. Remember the phenom that he was supposed to be. If he's anything close to that with J.J. Watt and Cushing and Whitney Mercilus and that back end that they have.
Charles James II.
Okay. All right.
So think how awesome
I don't know.
They
Black tie's yelling in my ear. I can't hear because the mics are too good. So if the Texans are going to give up 17, 19 points a game, somewhere around there, why would you want Ryan Mallett?
Because what's Brian Hoyer going to provide?
Brian Hoyer, if Aaron Foster was available, Brian Hoyer would be a better option because you could lean on the running game. Because they don't have the running game to lean on, I'm more likely the guy that can push the ball down the field. Ryan Mallett has better tools in terms of being able to make big plays in that offense. I think it's going to be tougher than
Mallett
needs
to make.
Mallett
turns
the ball over. Now you can't play to your strength.
Well, I mean,
which
we've seen Brian Hoyer turn the ball over.
By the way, the idea that Brian Hoyer takes care of the ball, he threw 12 touchdown passes last year and 13 picks. He turns the ball over plenty himself, too. All right, let's get to our last one here, and it is the aforementioned Buffalo Bills, Matt Castle, Tyrod Taylor. And I want to say, again, Bucky Brooks was the first person to say this. Ike Taylor quickly on his heels. The first two people I heard say this, that Tyrod Taylor should and will win the gig. And I think that's exactly the way it should be. Let's see how Madden considers this. With a minute 30 left in the second quarter, Matt Castle, first and 10 on his own 37-yard line. Castle to his new target. I don't like when they wear those all blues, by the way.
What are you talking about?
I don't like that. Blue shirt and pants. It doesn't look right. It looks silly. But Charles Clay fumbles it.
Fumbles?
That's right. Charles Clay fumbles. That's what happens in games. With a minute left in the second quarter, Tyrod Taylor first and goal from the 8.
Oh.
Intercepted by Aaron Williams. He's been a ball hawk. He got both those turnovers.
How about
with a minute 56 left in the game, 0-0.
This sounds about right.
The field goal is good.
Who is that, Dan Carpenter?
With 47 seconds left, Taylor. Intercepted. Matt Castle's team is gonna win it.
Oh, there's a flag.
What happened here? Oh, it's called back on a late flag.
There's a flag.
Oh, that guy's got long arms.
Hey, I thought it was a flag.
So there's a flag, and it was this final score is 3-0.
Hey, real quick back there, can you show us the Browns again? Can you just give us the Browns for a second here? I just want to point something out. I'm gonna have to do this, I think.
By the way, as we're doing this with the Browns, just so you know, it's like 3 minute quarters, hence the low scores.
Oh, is that part of the reason?
That's an important.
It's not because none of these teams can move the ball.
No. Can you just show me the Browns real fast again? I want to point something out.
I want to look at those Steeler uniforms.
Well, that's what I wanted to mention.
They're all brown.
I think this is as a public service to everybody. I want to let everybody know. You might be curious when you watch them play. Their jerseys say Cleveland on them very plainly right at the top. And then on the side of their pants, it says Browns. Now, a lot of people are saying, why did they do that? And I figured it out the other day. It's because they're the Cleveland Browns.
Yes.
That's how I came up. It was a pretty straightforward answer. Yeah, when I thought it through, I was like, oh, that's why.
Yeah, he's
Here's also, like, a lot of teams that have
It says Browns on their
even
pants.
Even if you look at the Buffalo Bills uniform, you notice that they have the Stampeding Buffalo on the hip. Well, they don't have a logo like that. Obviously, the helmet is plain, so they have to put to write it out.
Are there, but the people at the game know who the team
maybe,
is,
maybe,
right? But you don't
TV,
need to read Browns.
But on TV, maybe Football Baby doesn't know who the Browns are.
Oh, I think Football Baby knows everything he needs to know
he's
about
so
pro
quick
football.
And he can read.
All right, last one for us.
We got another one.
Sacrilegious, perhaps, another to some, one. But I know that the fans in Denver are going to join me on this one. In fact, I'll never be so dumb as to say Brock Osweiler over Peyton. But there are, listen, in August, there are people in Denver now saying, oh, Osweiler's our better option right now. So don't put that on me. Put that on your own people in Denver, Broncos fans.
I haven't heard that.
First, and look it up. You'll see it. Mile High Report. I've been kibitzing with them online, and they confirm what I just said. First and 10, Manning's first drive, deep down the field, but
okay, well, that's
intercepted by T.J. Ward. And by the way, those are the worst Browns, Broncos uniforms. Don't wear those.
He can't throw the ball that far. Yeah, no, that was never
up ahead, 13 seconds left in the second quarter. First and 10, Osweiler deep to Demaryius Thomas. He's looking. He's looking. He finds him in the back of the end zone. What a play. Maybe he is a better option.
Chris Harris.
Late fourth quarter, 3rd and 18. Manning's Broncos still down. Manning finds a wide open Cody Latimer for a 78-yard touchdown. Go Indiana Hoosier. Manning ties the game. Osweiler, though, still some precious seconds left on the clock. Osweiler drives, sets up a 47-yard field goal for Brandon McManus. Let's see if he can get this one. It's up. It's good. Osweiler over Peyton. Peyton's last chance, 22 seconds left. Finds Demaryius Thomas down the left sideline for a 68-yard gain. One timeout left, 14 seconds. A handoff, Peyton. Come on, Sheriff. You got to know better than
that. Is that a horse collar?
He hands it off. They scramble back for another play. Can they get this play off? Snap the ball, Peyton. He can't get it off. Osweiler does it. Kubiak, disgusted. He's crying, it looks like.
Gary Kubiak is upset because he's just beaten himself.
I think he's wept. He's conflicted.
He's like, what do I do here?
Yeah, he's like, he was really like Two-Face. Yeah. Like Batman's really like,
we won! I know.
That was fun. I want to do more of that black tie. That was
like
good
a goon
fun.
In an 80s movie right there.
Yeah, but see, for the people listening, they couldn't see Kubiak's face. But
I'm
trust
sorry
us,
about that.
It was very, very bad. He was very upset by that. All right, so EH hits the bricks here, but that leaves the three of us to figure this out in our continuing series. You guys know the Jenga theory. For me, it's something I developed, I think, 2 years ago, that like the game Jenga, if you take the wrong piece out of the NFL puzzle, the whole thing can implode on you. Every team has at least one Jenga piece. We play expert level Jenga here. We don't just do the quarterbacks. In fact, we don't allow you to name a quarterback because if just about any NFL team loses its quarterback, the thing's going to implode. So who is the Jenga piece on each NFL team that if you take them away, the whole thing goes down? And we talked about the AFC East on our most recent podcast. Go back and listen to that one. We did, I think Gronk was one off the top of my head. He's, to me, is where the Jenga theory began, in fact.
He was, exactly.
You take 87 off that Patriots team, that they become very pedestrian. When he's out there, they become a Super Bowl champion. So, all right, let's today do the NFC West. And in real time, Handsome, let's play a little Jenga, shall we?
Yeah.
As we do it here. I'm going to start with you, Buck. The team that's played in the last two Super Bowls, the Seattle Seahawks, who do you see as their Jenga piece?
Marshawn Lynch. Marshawn Lynch is the bell cow for them. He's the one that sets the table for that offense. Part of the reason that offense has been able to run successfully is because he powers the ball in between the tackles, does a great job of setting up the running game. And prior to Jimmy Graham arriving, you could argue that he was their best receiver. In every critical situation when Russell Wilson had to pass, The ball somehow landed in Marshawn Lynch's hands. He is the guy that makes that offense go. And even though Russell Wilson was just signed to a lucrative deal, everyone in Seattle and around the league believe that Marshawn Lynch is the one that makes that offense.
To the point, really, that the coaches are frustrated by his behavior, but they realize and they try and discipline him in game. They leave him out of first quarters and stuff. But ultimately, the team doesn't respond when he's not out there. By the way, one of the craziest things I've seen, you say he's a good pass catcher. I never consider him to be that, but in that critical drive that almost won them the Super Bowl, the first play is a wheel route to Marshawn Lynch out of the backfield deep up the left sideline. That was crazy.
Go back to the championship game against the Green Bay Packers. That drive that brought him close, same thing. Marshawn Lynch makes plays. That is the trait that he brings that a lot of people don't talk about. He is a complete running back who can run in between the tackles but also catch balls on the perimeter.
Handsome, how say you?
I think this year, if the Seahawks brought in Jimmy Graham and they want to do a little bit more in the passing game with their offense, and let's assume that they're going to shift that way, I realize that it's early to say it, but I think that Jimmy Graham could become the Jenga piece for them, because if that's what they want to do and they've spent a lot of time and obviously money investing in that, if he's not available for them, things could go bad pretty quickly.
Two quick ones. One, Michael Robinson, who's as plugged into what the Seahawks are doing as anybody, sat in on this podcast 2 weeks ago. And if you're a Seahawks fan, really, do go back and listen to that one, because he makes a case for Tom Cable being as valuable an assistant as any assistant in the NFL. Another one, Cam Chancellor, who commands that locker room. Red Bryant used to. Michael Robinson used to be that locker room leader. Now it's Cam Chancellor. Now he's sitting out. You know, he's
They got a young player there that I think can replace him in Deion Bailey. He's playing really well in the preseason. He's been ready for an opportunity to get on the field. He's showing that he can get it done.
All right. I think I'm with you. For as great as that defense is, I think you could take one piece away from it. You take Marshawn Lynch out. It's right. Kristen Michael looks good, but it seems that the team responds very differently when Lynch is out there. Next up, the San Francisco 49ers. I start with you, Handsome Hank. Who's their Jenga piece?
It's a difficult one to find, isn't it? I mean, I think...
Well, the worst the team gets, it's harder
exactly.
to find.
You know, Navarro Bowman is a name that you could throw out there as probably the best player on the roster, but then again, they managed okay without him for all of last season. So it's sort of, I think it's a difficult one to come up with.
I say Navarro Bowman, but disagree with what you just said. They were the contender or one of the top two or three contenders in the conference. Navarro Bowman disappears, so too does the magic of that 49ers defense. To me, it's fairly straightforward. Although, I mean, I know Patrick Willis you can make a case for, Justin right. Smith. But for all the losses that they've had now of guys that are still active wearing that 49ers uniform, it's got to be Bowman.
No, Bowman is a huge piece, but I'm going to go to the offensive side of the ball, and I'm going to say Joe Staley is a guy that is.
I thought about Joe Staley.
He's a guy that played at a Pro Bowl caliber, a guy that is very vital to that offense because he mans the backside of Colin Kaepernick. And if this is a team that even though they want to run the ball, they're still going to entrust the offense to Colin Kaepernick and being able to throw the ball, Joe Staley has to be there because he protects the blind side. And also know this, they lost Anthony Davis in the offseason when he decided to retire. They need to have a guy with Pro Bowl caliber credentials on that offensive line. He is that guy.
You know, he's more X factor than Jenga piece, if we can parse through our made-up terminology here. But when Vernon Davis gets it going, that Niners team is completely different. I don't understand how he can just vanish for months on end the way he does. Because in the playoffs, when he gets in the playoffs, go back and look at that. I always used to ride that. The Niners will be dynamite because Vernon Davis, once the postseason gets there, was the best player. Two straight postseasons for the Niners. He was their best player. If he can get going again, maybe there's a chance Kaepernick can be, and the team in general can be respectable.
Jeep Chris, new offensive coordinator, was a quarterback coach there, played a heavy hand in some of the game plan, and particularly that playoff run where you saw Vernon get hot, you saw Alex Smith get hot and those things. Look for Vernon Davis to go back to being one of the key playmakers in that passing game. Anquan Boldin is another guy that I think could be indispensable because of his leadership and what he brings as a versatile player.
And Torrey Smith and Carlos Hyde. The cupboard isn't bare on offense. It's a matter of if Cap gets to the next level that we've been waiting for a couple of years. Next up, the Arizona Cardinals.
Check this real quick. I know last
episode
did Jenga as well, and you guys, no one won. So for this show, can someone actually win this round?
Well, it's Dave's good.
Someone's got to win.
Doing very well against Handsome.
We got to do a speed round.
All right, we'll see what happens, Black Tie.
All right, let's get to the Niners.
All right. The Niners. We just talked about the Niners. How about the Arizona Cardinals black tie? Does that make you happy? I know you like to talk about one guy on their team. His name is Patrick Peterson. In the meantime, Handsome Hank, who do you have as their Jenga piece?
The Cardinals Jenga piece. That's a tough one. Again, I mean, Patrick Peterson could be that guy. I need to think about that one a little bit more.
All right, go ahead. Bucky Brooks. I don't want to play fast and loose with it. It's sort of like saying the quarterback. I said Tom Cable for the Seahawks is an interesting name. It's too easy to say Bruce Arians. He's the head coach of the team. But legitimately, he has the magic touch. From the Colts to the Cardinals, he keeps it rolling. But you can't use him. I'm taking him off the board.
He's a very good coach. I wasn't going to use him anyway. And contrary to what Black Tie would say about Patrick Peterson being maybe the best player on defense, I believe the Honey Badger is the linchpin to what they do defensively. Honey Badger played with the ACL, is coming back, is now rounding into form, looking like the guy that came out of LSU that is very dynamic in terms of his playmaking ability. I believe he is the guy that they can ill afford to lose because all the pieces around him, look, we've seen Patrick Peterson. We've seen him play well. We also saw him struggle last year. That defense continued to play at a high level. But with Honey Badger, when you lose a guy that's a versatile player, a guy that can drop down in the box, can cover guys in the slot, can play in the deep middle, and also has a knack for getting his hands on the ball, I just believe he is the indispensable piece on that defense. And because that team is driven by their defense at times, I believe he's the one that you have to keep an eye on.
I hear that. Black Tie wants to defend his friend.
I'm not defending. I'm just saying Patrick came out a couple of days ago and said this year is going to be his defensive player.
Oh, he did.
Hold on. The question is, Bucky, relax. Hold on. What does he have to do to become that full-on defensive player of the year? Because he has all the physical tools.
He has all the physical tools. The big thing for Patrick Peterson is he's never been disciplined in terms of his technique. He's a guy that because he's been so athletic, he's been able to get away with being bigger, faster, stronger than the guys on the other side. As you get up and as you spend more time in the league and as offensive coordinators attack you, he has to be willing to change his game and have counters to what they do in terms of reaction standpoint. For him to win the Defensive Player of the Year award, he has to lock down his side, and he also has to find a way to get around the ball and kind of produce those game-changing plays. When you think about what Darrelle Revis was able to do in terms of not only traveling and being able to match the other guy, but being able to lock down the side, it's the consistency. That's what I need to see from Patrick Peterson.
I love how we're having real football talk, and Hank and Shaq are just playing.
Oh, I see.
We're having it. You know what? We're competitors. It doesn't make a difference.
Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter if we're playing Tiddlywinks,
Jenga,
or Jenga. I want to win. That's what makes Damashek.
If you watch the show for one reason on YouTube, this is the reason. Shaq and Hank just going at it.
Well, it's a hardcore game. Handsome's a noble foe who I intend to defeat nonetheless. All right, I'm going to focus here to read.
You ought to touch on
the St. Louis Rams. That's how we get to it. The St. Louis Rams, Bucky Brooks, who is their 2015 Jenga piece.
You know, it's funny because on the rundown we have two names, Robert Quinn and Aaron Donald, listed. Of those two, I'm going to say Robert Quinn is the piece that they can't miss. I like Chris Long, and I like what he brings off the table. He's a hardworking, energetic guy that gets to the quarterback. But Robert Quinn is the best pass rusher on that team. Yeah. He changes the game in terms of how you have to block them and slide the protection in his manner. He is disruptive. He creates forced fumbles. He changes the clock of the opposing quarterback. Robert Quinn is the guy that I think is the one that they can ill afford to lose over the course of a season.
Well, this is a ridiculous answer because he's never taken an NFL snap, so maybe more of an X factor than a Jenga piece. But if Todd Gurley is as good, I keep saying it, if he's as good as he was at Georgia, they can go to the playoffs this year.
Between Black Tie with Patrick Peterson and you with Todd Gurley.
I love Todd Gurley.
I know
like Todd
you do.
But look, remember, Trey Mason is not necessarily chopped liver at the running back position. I think with both of those guys, you have the ability to pummel people with a heavy-handed run attack. I just think this team is built on their defense with Greg Williams dialing it up. It's important that front four gets after the quarterback, and Robert Quinn is the guy that kind of sets the table for him.
Handsome Hank, any other name you want to throw
down
out?
In the bottom five.
Yeah, there is. This one's here.
All right,
I found my Jenga piece. Do you have an answer for this one?
I would agree with Bucky. I think Robert Quinn is, he's one of the elite five pass rushers in the NFL. You take that type of player away from any team, and they're going to be in trouble.
Well, listen, we love the game of pro football, but I think we all agree that it could be a little bit better, and I have a lot of ideas on how to get there. That's why I scheduled a little something. I dropped an email to one of our coworkers a few months back, and and said, I'm going to start calling you every week and give you some of my thoughts. Here's my latest attempt to track down our coworker. He lives in New York. Today's the day.
Hi, it's Dave. It's Shaq. Hi, it's Dave.
Please leave a voice message for at the tone, please record your message.
Hi, Commissioner Goodell. Dave here out in Los Angeles again. So I guess you're busy still. Wanted to touch base with you today. Now, you know, I've heard some rumors about a team moving to Los Angeles. I think it's a great idea. Okay? But we can't rest on our laurels, Commissioner. There are some names that are just too vile to be NFL teams. Like, you can't be the Rats. Same goes for Worms, Vultures, Los Angeles Cheetahs would be cool because that's fast, but also it sounds like cheaters. Giraffe, I feel like, is a weird metaphor.
Crabs?
No. You don't want those either. I'm thinking one good name. Here's a fierce beast for you. How about the Los Angeles Rodgers? Huh? Like the ring of that? Try this one on for size. The L.A. Handsome Devils. Now that's what I call a tribute to you, sir. Anywho, just wanted to drop you a line on that. I hope everything's going well in Manhattan, and I look forward to seeing you soon. Take good care, fella. Love you.
I love you as a friend.
Hello? I love you. I think that went well, though.
Yeah, he hasn't. It's been. We've had a tough time connecting.
Right.
We've been playing a lot of phone tag.
Yeah, is that what it is?
I think that I think my message is getting through because I keep hearing
I think
we're making progress every day towards a team in LA. All right. Oh yeah. Well, let's speed Jenga until we have a winner here, and then that's that. Handsome Hank. Go. This is like the U.S. against England in that war 200 years ago. Remember that, Bucky?
Jack, new rule: you have 3 seconds to play.
Uh-oh.
Oh, dear.
So, woo! So what, Redcoat? We won the big one. USA, USA. So what? So I lost Jenga. All right, we'll be back with more Hooey and Applesauce later on. In the meantime, thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven. Very thin after that shameful loss.